Well, hi, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Fine Wine Confidential podcast, now focused on all about Virginia Norton. In this episode, number two, you will meet someone who has gone all in on Norton. Some might say a crazy bet. That is, of course, Jennifer McLeod, the founder and owner of Chrysalis Vineyards at the Ag District located in Middleburg, Virginia. Jenny founded Chrysalis in 1998 when she found her ideal piece of property. And although she has various other traditional grape varieties planted at her two vineyard locations, which encompass 70 acres under vine, she has the world's most extensive single planting of Norton with just under 50 acres. I interviewed Jenny and her winemaker, Jake Blottinger, for this episode. You'll learn why she chose Norton as her focus when she got into the wine growing business after selling a successful tech company in the late 1990s. Take a listen. Say hi, Jenny.
Hello. Thanks, Fred. Thanks for coming up.
And Jake Blottinger, who is her winemaker and everything else in the vineyard besides what the vineyard guy does, right?
Right.
So, but let me start with you, Jenny. This is real simple. Why Norton? What was the inspiration between Norton? You do have the largest Norton vineyard in the world.
Well, I got to tell you, I had never tasted Norton, and I had attended a conference in Charlottesville. Let me back up. I've been kind of a serial entrepreneur, and I had sold small business in 1995. And a couple weeks after that sale, I was in Charlottesville because I was interested in doing something with grapes. I thought, wow, what am I going to do now that I've sold a business? You know, I was 40 years old, and I'm like, this is way too young to retire. And so I thought, hey, let's grow grapes. And so after so many, you know, years, couple decades at that point, drinking California wines and segueing into French and Spanish, I'd gotten a little ABC. And for those that don't know, ABC is anything but Chardonnay, anything but Cabernet. And I love both of those wines, by the way. But, you know, variety is the spice of life. So the ASEV, Eastern Section Conference in 1995, the theme was alternative varieties. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. I would like to expand my own personal connoisseurship, you know, not from a snooty sense, but just from the sense of experiencing, understanding, and being able to identify different varieties. And it's always interested me. I've been into wine since my early adulthood. It was at Charlottesville at the Omni Hotel that I first tasted a Norton. The morning session were the white wines, and I also had tasted some Viognier there, and I thought, wow, this is really, really good white wine. I sort of glommed on to Dennis Horton, who was talking with his consultant and consulting winemaker, Alan Kinney, and I sat down next to Dennis at lunch, and the rest is history. The afternoon session, Norton came out, and I was like, what on earth is this stuff?
So this was in 1996?
Five.
1995.
Yeah. It was in July of 1995.
And so when did you plant your first Norton vine?
Well, I engaged Alan as a consultant. He asked me a really interesting question. He goes, what do you like to drink? And I go, well, wow, I'm really into this Norton stuff. That's one. And so I planted our first Nortons in 1998. I was living in Florida at the time, so I needed to find land. I needed to come to Virginia. It was kind of a big deal. I located this farm in 97, close on it in early 98, and began planting, was drilling holes out front before I even moved in.
What made you believe that this area of Middleburg was going to be a good site, especially for Norton?
Certainly some fundamental experimentation on what's the planting zone, you know, it's 7A or, you know, suitable, but not much colder than this. But I also saw a little bit into the future in recognizing the importance of the marketing and having a market to be able to, you know, support a winery. So it was either the Charlottesville area, which I really like. I think it's beautiful there. But I just fell in love with Western Loudoun County. I think it's some of the prettiest land in the world. You know, I'm 11 miles from Dulles International Airport, an hour away from Washington. And this metropolitan statistical area is the number one per capita area for personal consumption of wine in the United States. More wine per capita gets drunk in this region than anywhere else, including San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles. So a lot of wine. So I thought, okay, beautiful piece of land, beautiful area, in an okay climate zone. So here we are.
So you plant your first vine in 98. Yep. What's your first vintage?
Well, Norton, interestingly, I think one of the reasons why Norton didn't recover so quickly after Prohibition is that there's a couple negative points about growing Norton. Number one, it takes about an extra year to be able to come into production because it's a little bit of a slower grower. Also, it does not easily root from cuttings. The percentage of successful propagated vines is less than Vitis vinifera or other American species. Takes a little bit of time. So kind of tough to start and slow to grow. You know, you can imagine you pull out the list. Okay, Fred, let's go here. Prohibition is over. Let's plant some grapes. Okay, Norton, tough to start, slow to grow. Next, Concord. Okay, whatever.
So what was the first vintage then before you finally got some fruit?
For the Norton, it was the 2000.
Oh, well, that's pretty quick based on what you're telling me.
Normally you can get a small crop in the second leaf. You know, when you plant it and it has a leaf,
right?
That's its first leaf. It's not even a year old. That first vineyard is now in its 25th leaf. So 98 to 23 inclusive is 25 years.
Well, Jake, let me turn to you here for a second. I'm curious. You came to Chrysalis what year now?
In 2018.
19. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I believe you said you were North Carolina making
from
wine?
From North Carolina, and I made wine down in Georgia and a few places in North Carolina.
What was the first time you had a bottle of Norton?
2019, when I came to Chrysalis, actually.
So you had not had Norton before that?
No.
Nice introduction.
It was, yeah, perfect.
What was the first thing that surprised you about working with Norton?
Working with Norton?
Yeah.
Well, no profanity on the podcast. I think I've never experienced something that doesn't make sense. Like, you look at it, you know, the textbook chemistry for wine grapes, you get a 3.4 pH, 24 Brix, and, you know, this ideal, like, 5 TA kind of thing, and you've got beautiful red wine. Norton is basically, like, 26 Brix, 3.6 pH, and then the TA is 8. It's just an acid bomb, but it tastes so sweet when it's on the vine, and then you get it in the cellar, and it's... it's not that at all. It's Norton.
It's Norton.
It's Norton.
Well, Jenny, so what was the first surprise you had after planting it and starting to harvest it?
I'm just a lover of Norton. I just think it's so incredibly extracted, intense. You know, people ask me, you know, well, what does Norton taste like? I tell them I don't want to be flippant, but it's like asking somebody, what does an orange taste like? Mm. Tastes like an orange. It tastes like Norton. And the logical follow-on to that comment is that, of course, as a great grape of the world, doesn't every great grape of the world have its own unique identity? Right. It tastes of itself. That always impresses the daylights out of me, that it is has a wild character, sort of speaks to America, you know, the new world and the brashness of, you know, this new country, the fact that it's so disease resistant and it's ours and it's historically so significant, renowned in the wine capitals of the world, Paris and Vienna. And so I thought the idea of being involved in the restoration of America's native gem was worthwhile.
Well, so when you started here producing wine in 2000, outside of Dennis Horton, how many people were producing Norton, do you think?
Not many. I think that Shep Rouse down at Rockbridge had some Norton in the ground, and that really is the only other one that I remember at this point. So, I mean, when I started, Fred, I would tell people, yeah, I'm going to do Norton. And they're like, like this blank stare. What's that? Nobody heard of Norton. Not nobody. That's an exaggeration. But particularly with the general public, 85, 90% of people didn't know what that grape variety was. So I'm like, ooh, okay, this is going to require some hand selling here.
Well, that's why I'm here today, because 80 or 90% of the people still don't know who drink wine. What is Norton? Do they, Jake?
No. I get the eye roll from other winemakers when I start talking about Norton. And I fell in love with it in 2019. It's a love-hate relationship. But talking about it with consumers in the tasting room occasionally, you know, at first they're like, what is that? And then they try it and they're like, oh.
Jenny, I'm curious because you have the most experience with this outside of Horton here in the state of Virginia at this point. What was it like when you finally had a well-aged Norton, and how did that?
Oh, wow.
How'd that stir the mind, if you will?
Well, that just added to the excitement, to be honest with you, because I've been very fortunate to have been an entrepreneur and been fairly wealthy from my young adulthood, really, from my early mid-20s. So I had the wherewithal to enjoy classified growth Bordeaux and the finer wines of Spain. So I certainly knew what good Meritage blends tasted like, and I certainly also knew what happens when you properly age a quality red wine. We have wines now that go back to 2020 that we cellar. I still have multiple cases of
2002.
I mean, from 2000.
Oh, 2000.
I'm sorry. Yeah, No. 2000. 23 years ago. And those wines are still beautiful and still advancing. So something about the chemical constituency of Norton, its structure, its acidity, its extraction, its very intense fruitiness, you know, wines can die. And, you know, if there's not sufficient fruit element in the wine, the aging, it just sort of goes flat and it loses its fruitiness and then it's not very pleasant. Norton has fruit in spades and it just is developing these ones from the 2000 timeframes now that, you know, are just developing that beautiful bottle bouquet and they've got years to last.
Well, Jake, chime in here a little bit. So the first time you had a well-aged bottle of Norton, you're a novice making Norton. All of a sudden, what did you think?
I remember having the conversation with Jenny when we were working on the 2019 Loxley. And I asked the question to Jenny. I said, I don't understand why we're doing this. And she said, well, let me show you. Let's go down to my cellar. And she pulled a bottle of 2008 Loxley.
Yeah.
And we opened it and she poured it. And she said, now wait. Just give it a minute. It's, you know, it's been cellared. And I'm, you know, okay. I'm waiting. And she finally pours it. She goes, okay, now try it. And, the only thing that went through my head was, oh, that's why we do this way. That's why we make the Loxley for aging.
So you're talking about your blending methods with the Loxley Reserve and what you do in the cellar and everything.
Everything from the vineyard all the way to the bottle. I mean, the cork choice is meant for aging.
So Jenny, unlike other people who produce Norton, you produce a lot of different Nortons.
Well, gosh. Yes, we do. Well, it is our flagship grape variety. But more important than that is its incredible versatility. This is an incredibly versatile grape. We can make wines a fruity sangria-like, you know, a hamburger drinker all the way to a wine that'll age 30 to 40 years in the bottle.
Well, I'll speak to that 08. 2008 Loxley Reserve, because when we had our first Norton Cup challenge at the Homestead in 2022 and the poor judges had selected, were going through all these Nortons, young Nortons at 11, 12 o'clock in the morning. So that evening for dinner, I hosted the judges. And at the end of the dinner, I had brought a couple bottles of 2008 Loxley Reserve I bought here at Chrysalis with me and poured it for them. And it was like, you could see their look on their face when they were tasting this during dinner towards the end and going, wow, that was the expression of wow. And I said, I just wanted you all to see what happens to this grape when it's properly made and properly aged so that you can catalog that and understand why I'm so passionate about Norton myself. And they were blown away. They really had a hard time believing that was Norton that they were tasting.
Right.
It was just like a classified Bordeaux growth. It was really remarkable wine at that point. So I get that part of it. It's a matter of other people trying to understand that.
Right.
You know, one thing, Fred, that is perhaps a bit of a shift, which lends importance and credibility to doing a number of different styles of Norton, is that there seems to be kind of fewer people that have the patience to take a great bottle of wine and put it in proper storage and sit on it for 15 years. We're making wines, sound, dry Nortons, but that are vinified in a manner that allows them to be consumed young and still be very enjoyable. And that's where Jake's skills and then both Jake and my blending input creates a number of different high-quality Norton wines.
What I still don't quite understand, and I'll look to you, Jake, to start, but Jenny, chime in here. How does Norton work making sparkling wine?
Carefully. So, you know, the acid is always the biggest concern in Norton. I think that's the thing that Jenny and I are always talking about. It's ways to deal with and adjust acids. And, you know,
in a natural sense,
I don't do chemical additions. I mean, Jenny and I argue passionately about making additions to the wines. And we're both on the same page, I think, with that, is we only do what it takes to make the best wine possible. So when it comes to sparkling wine, Norton's got all this acid, and, you know, the rule here at Chrysalis Vineyards is you don't pick Norton until October 1 at its earliest. And so when we make sparkling, like the Pet Nat, we pick that on October 1, and it's just the right amount of sugar and pH and TA, and it's that perfect. And it's a nice, interesting bottle of sparkling.
You do make sparkling wine for aging purposes as well, do you not?
Not exactly initially. We never sort of designed a Norton sparkler, which we've only done in a Pet Nat style, right?
Okay.
A Petiot Nat.
That's what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah, no, so we have not done a true traditional
method
and, you know,
laying it down on the... Well, will it lend itself to it? I'd be curious what it might produce if...
You know, I don't know. I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, they've done, you know, as an example, Australia had done those sparkling Shirazes that seemed to be particularly popular. But I think it's a kind of a niche thing.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure that... Now, that being said, as a potential constituent in a cuvée with a little bit like for adding color and fruitiness and like a pink champagne style, mm-hmm, pink sparkler. That may very well be the case. Do we let this cat out of the bag?
We're breaking news here today, folks.
We are doing some méthode traditionnelle. We are making some traditional sparkling champagne style, but it's not with Norton this year.
We're trialing.
Yeah. Well, I've learned in my 45 years in this industry that every winemaker I've ever met has a side sparkling wine project down in their cellar somewhere. Everybody seems to have some side sparkling wine. It's just the allure of it must be something that they got to do.
Fred, can I just back up for just a second? Because I want to just add a little bit to what Jake was talking about in working with the acids in Norton. It's been sort of a mission going all the way back to a very horrible vintage in Virginia, the 2003 vintage. Up here in Northern Virginia, we had a killing frost on October 2nd, and the Norton was not ripe, and we were freaking out. And anyway, to make a longer story short, we realized that if you were able to drop the acid a little bit of Norton, you bring up the mid-palate richness of the wine. Imagine I'm moving my hands where, you know, it's sort of like a V or a U, where the fruitiness of Norton and then the mid palate sort of drops and is not rich. Mm-hmm. And then the acids present, kind of on the way back up. Pull those acids down and you can imagine flattening out that U. And that has been, that was an epiphany for me that, and now how do we do that naturally? And that's done in the vineyard with really good viticultural and careful viticultural practices, keeping the sun on that, those vines, opening it up, making sure they're nutritionally supported, but then also in the cellar. And that has been a process over the years of making of the wine processes that help us reduce some of the malic acid in Norton to bring up the mid palate.
I mean, I've heard many times about Norton is bulletproof in the vineyard. If you could break that down, Jake, what does that mean?
The idea is that you could plant it and it'll grow like a weed. And that is true. It gets disease, but it doesn't get impacted by the disease pressure. Bugs kind of ignore it. All the pests, the deer love it. Right about the end of October, they're on top of it. The birds love it at the end of October, but it doesn't get powdery or downy. It doesn't get black rot the same way. I mean, it gets black rot, but it just keeps growing and keep ripening. It doesn't affect it.
It's interesting to note that Norton is the most disease-resistant bunch grape in the world. Hmm. Not one of the, for any kind of fruit production, raisins, table fruit or wine. And so that in and of itself was one of the most significant elements in growing this grape to me because of its low environmental impact from a sense of grow something that wants to grow there. You know, we don't have to coax it to grow. We don't have to cajole it to grow. As Jake said, oh my God, it's that Norton. Get it, get rid of it. If it's not in the vineyard, it's a weed.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have.
Well, and I think I'd like to dispel maybe a myth some people might have. Norton is not very prolific. You don't get a lot of juice out of your grapes, do you?
That is correct. So vinifera, on average is about 165 gallons per ton. And Norton is about 145. And
okay.
Even in 23, this vintage, we were seeing at the bottom of like 120. And that's hard pressing. I mean, just trying to squeeze everything out.
Norton has a large skin and seed to juice ratio. It's like it's a small berry and there's could be 5 seeds in there. So there's not a lot of juice and it's kind of goopy. So it's also a little bit difficult to handle in the cell and move it around because it's pretty thick.
Cement.
Jake says it's cement. So Jake, so when you came here in 2019, clearly Chrysalis had, coming close to 20 years underneath its belt as a brand. You're walking into a new challenge. What are you thinking? I'm coming to this place that has the largest planting of Norton in the world. It's got this reputation for Norton. I'd never produced a bottle of Norton in my career. What was that challenge like? What were you thinking?
So I had read the Wild Vine in college. It's required reading. And so I was excited about coming to Chrysalis and the opportunity to give it my best shot. I had saved myself for the best Norton on the face of the planet. So I wasn't going to have somebody else's Norton. I was going to have Chrysalis Norton. And I remember having that first 2016 Barrel Select. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Just walking in the cellar, I was excited, spruced the place up. And the first day of harvest hit, and I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Now, fortunately, I had an older, experienced consultant that was working with Jake in that first vintage.
Okay. That always helps, right?
Yeah.
Who was that? I'm curious.
Jason Burris.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Jason had been our winemaker in, 12 and 13 or 13, 14, and then had left to hang a shingle as a consultant. And so it worked out really, really, really well for us. And I was able to help Jason in his new entrepreneurial endeavor as a consultant and then also train up a talented, enthusiastic younger winemaker.
Wow. Well, so looking down the road here, What do you think the future of Norton looks like?
Well, you know, I haven't changed my perspective, Fred, in 25 years. I'm as excited about Norton today as I was when I started. Maybe even more so as we understand the grape more, as we're able to go through vintages of experimentation and toward our vision of creating the best red wine from this grape that we possibly can. I think any failings that we've had are my fault for just not telling the world more about Norton. I think the exposure to more wine drinkers with this grape will get them on board.
What's it like in a taste room if you're there and somebody comes in as a consumer and they've never had a bottle of Norton and they're like, what is this? I mean, what's that experience like? I'm curious.
I think that's the hardest thing to do is explain to somebody who's never had Norton or heard of Norton. They always ask, you know, what is it? What is it? What is it? You know, what does it taste like? What's it like? And it's just Norton. And so I don't even say that anymore. I just pour them a glass.
Now, here you go.
Okay.
I mean, that's the easiest way to answer it.
You know, it depends on what somebody's into. If, like, for me, who came from years and years and years of enjoyment of high quality wines, it was exciting to me because it was a new character, new flavor, unique identity. And I was looking for that. I think for people that are snooty, maybe, you know, the type that, like, I only drink this right. kind of grape variety, you know. Yeah, maybe not for them yet. But I find that I'm going to give a visual thing again here. Think about a bell curve, right? You know, you got your – and this bell curve is new wine drinkers to experienced old winos, right? And so I'm finding initially that – those who are just being introduced into wine really like Norton, really love Norton. They haven't been sort of, pigeonholed into, oh, only French wines make good, you know, or whatever. And then all the way over that curve to the end of it is like people that have been around the block like me, right? And it's like, wow, this is an interesting grape. This is something different that I can wrap my head around and try to understand. What I'm finding is that those tails of the bell curve are going up. They're inching up, and more people, as they become aware of Norton, are finding as a laudable grape to add to the cellar. Again, we started off talking about variety being the spice of life. You know, if I only had Norton to drink, would I want that? No. If I only had Cabernet Sauvignon to drink or Marriage, no. Right. So the idea of experiencing different wines is what makes, it's one of the things that makes a lifetime enjoyment of wine so interesting.
Well, as you know, for my part, getting close to 2 years now, the last glass of red wine I have every night before I go to bed is a glass of Norton. And my observations about Norton, to play into what you were saying about the consumer, I find Norton to be a serious wine and an intellectual wine. You don't quaff Norton. People quaff wine these days. You don't quaff Norton. You sip it. You ponder it. You sip it. You ponder it. And I find myself going intellectually into all these different corridors as I'm going through that process, and that's why I find it fascinating.
Well, now you're only drinking the best stuff, Fred. So to counter that, we do make wines that you can, in fact, the new, we don't know what we're going to be calling it, but it has been known as Sarah's Patio Red. We're going to update the name on our patio wines, just like we've updated some of our labeling of late. Be careful because that's a chugger and it's just so attractive and so fun.
That is a quaffable wine. I will say that.
Right. So that goes back to the versatility of the grape.
Versatility. That's the last word, as I would say. By the way, I wanted to get this in. Most folks don't know this and I don't know why we don't recognize this date, but today is the 90th anniversary of Liberation or post-prohibition.
Oh!
Repeal was 90 years ago today. So it's worth celebrating over a glass of Norton. Jenny and Jake, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Fred, for your interest.
Thank you.
I hope that interview intrigued you to seek out some of the Nortons produced by Chrysalis Vineyards. They have several different styles of Norton, and you can't go wrong trying any of them. However, I would suggest the Bull Run Mountain Cuvée for early drinking pleasure. Give it a slight chill, and you will be pleased with how well it drinks when it is young. In my next upcoming episode, number 3, I had the pleasure of sitting down in my studio over a bottle of white Burgundy and discussing the growing and production of Norton with Dave Drillick, the owner of 53rd Winery and Vineyard in Louisa, Virginia, and his extremely talented young winemaker, Chelsea Blevins. 53rd recently came out on top at the Homestead Norton Cup Challenge competition in November of 2023. This is a judging I began in 2022, and we will discuss that and much more, so stay tuned for that episode. And let me say once again how much I appreciate you being a listener of my podcast. You have made it a fulfilling endeavor for me, as the wines produced from Norton Grape have become a passion for me. Just when I didn't believe I would discover anything this exciting and new in the world of wine after 45 years of being in the industry. And as always, my podcast will stay commercial-free for your listening pleasure. Please direct any comments or questions you have to me at fred@finewineconfidential.com. See you on the other side. Music at Fine Wine Confidential podcast by Jason Shaw at audionautics.com from his copyrighted song Acoustic Shuffle under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License. I hope you enjoyed the show.